The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here from sunny Great Britain. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York. The opening lines from Richard III, and I think that sums up quite well the mood in Britain and even in the United States right now. It's hard not to be optimistic, to be upbeat, if you love your country. In either the UK or the US. You know, if you're a patriot, I think you're feeling pretty good today. I mean, over here, it is a beautiful sunny day. It's one of those days where the TV blares out repeated warnings about covering up and staying inside and putting on sunscreen and staying hydrated. And newspapers are full of tips on how to survive the heat. You know, one of those days that the rest of the world knows as summer, but is an unusual and wondrous occurrence here in the UK. And as I mentioned, you know, politically, just in world events, things are looking up. I was chatting briefly to Mr. McDonald, our Trumpet.com managing editor this morning. He mentioned that in his 7 years in the UK, he never remembers things seeming so upbeat. And like I said, I think the case is true in the US as well. There's good news that has come out of yesterday. I think if you're, as I said, a patriot in the US, you're probably feeling good about the Mueller hearing. For 2.5 years, you've had this. There's been this Mueller report and collusion investigation, etc., that's been a drag on the nation. The nation elect a president to lead them, and then you had this investigation holding back and frustrating that administration. But then so much of that was exposed yesterday, and commentators, even on the left, are talking about this being a real turning point for that administration. And then, as Mr. Flurry talked about on yesterday's show, Boris Johnson is swept into office in the UK with a really positive, upbeat, optimistic message. I've got the Daily Mail from yesterday in front of me. We'll talk about that a little more later in the show. But right on the cover, big letters, now bring us sunshine. I said, I don't think I've ever seen such optimistic headlines over here. Mr. Johnson unveiled his cabinet picks yesterday. There's a lot to like. As I said, we'll get into some of that in a little bit. But I want to talk about this optimism today. There are genuine reasons to be optimistic, to be happy. But I want to look at why. Why are things going right for Britain and America right now? How long is that going to last? What should we do with it? And I'll start with the Mueller report. I think just judging by the media coverage, this was a big deal in the US yesterday. If you believe the media, then I think everybody was glued to their TVs. Watching the full 5 hours of this, so we can talk about that for a little bit first, though I'm sure Mr. Stephen Flurry will have much more thorough coverage tomorrow. I mean, I don't know what he's planning on talking about, but I imagine that Sam Livingston will be going through some of those clips from the hearing, and you'll have more detail from him. But you had in the run-up to this report, you had the media and the Democrats really hyping this up. You had Gerald Nadler, who was the committee chairman that was bringing Mr. Mueller to report before him. He said this is a president who has violated the law 6 ways from Sunday. He said that there was very substantial evidence that Mr. Trump is guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors. And so he was talking about how this hearing from Mr. Mueller that took place yesterday, this was it. This was going to be the moment they were telling us that the entire American nation would be convinced, would rise up with one voice and say, well, we need to impeach President Trump. This was going to change everything. You know, they said, let Mueller present those facts to the American people because the administration must be held accountable and no president can be above the law. So this was it. This was going to prove beyond a shadow of doubt that President Trump colluded with Russians and broke the law and was going to be impeached. You know, that was the way that this hearing was sold. And the Democrats pinned all of these hopes and all of this hype on the Mueller report, on this Mueller testimony. And, well, I mean, for 2 years, they've pinned all of their hopes on this Mueller report, first of all, that was going to get rid of a president that they despised. That report came out after 2 years of investigation, this massive, expensive, open-ended, really, investigation, and it basically found nothing. And so then they pinned all of those same hopes on Mr. Mueller's testimony yesterday. And they were saying, well, this report didn't help us get Donald Trump, but then they were telling us, well, once we get this testimony, once the nation can see it on television, well, that's going to convince them. And then you had that testimony yesterday, and it was nothing like that hype. Nothing like, I mean, I was just looking over some of the headlines early on this morning, and they say it all, really. Grabian had a headline, confused-looking Mueller repeatedly asked for questions to be repeated. New York Post, the Mueller hearings were a waste of everybody's time. Politico, euphoria. White House GOP exult after a flat Mueller performance. Federalist Robert Mueller's testimony, a complete disaster for Democrats. Another Federalist, disaster for pundits of Robert Mueller's Mueller-doddering, stumbling performance shocks pundits. PJ Media, Robert Mueller goes from savior of the republic to bumbling fool in the course of 5 hours. So those are the headlines I saw first, but then I thought, okay, well, these are generally right-wing publications. I mean, not Politico, I guess, but in overall. I thought, well, maybe it's just the right wing that's saying this. Maybe this is just spin, for argument's sake. I decided, well, let's go and let's see what the New York Times is saying to find out what the far left is saying about this this hearing. And then right there on their front page, at least on the website, the blockbuster that wasn't. Mueller disappoints the Democrats. And I'll just read. This isn't the Federalist, this isn't PJ Media, this isn't Fox News. This is the New York Times covering that hearing yesterday. They wrote that in the days leading up to the special counsel's much-anticipated appearance before Congress, Democrats argued that the hearing from Robert S. Mueller III on television could transform the impeachment debate. While Americans might not read the book, the argument went, they would watch the movie. If so, the movie Americans tuned into on Wednesday was not the blockbuster Democrats had sought, nor was Mr. Mueller the action star that had been cast. Dignified but shaky at times, struggling to keep up, he largely stuck to yes or no and referred to the report answers and steadfastly refused to dramatize his conclusions as President Trump's critics wanted him to do. By the time he was finished, nearly 7 hours later, Democrats were disappointed they did not get the made-for-TV accusatory moment they had wanted, and the prospect for impeachment appeared far more difficult. They quote Lawrence Tribe. They call him a Harvard law professor who has argued that the House should pursue impeachment. So here's somebody who doesn't like Trump and wants to impeach him. And he wrote, much as I hate to say it, this morning's hearing was a disaster. Far from breathing life into his damning report, the tired Robert Mueller sucked the life out of it. The effort to save democracy and the rule of law, again, this is coming from someone on the radical left, from this lawless president has been set back, not advanced. A bit further down in this article, the New York Times, they write, Mr. Mueller's first extended discussion of his investigation since he was appointed 2 years ago, the threat to Mr. Trump's presidency appeared distant. And then they go through some of the more recent news about the way federal prosecutors in New York have signaled that they're probably not going to fire additional charges in that that whole hush money investigation over Stormy Daniels. The Federal Appeals Court dismissed a lawsuit that accused Mr. Trump of violating the Constitution by owning a business and being president at the same time. Even ABC News, we can play a quick clip from them where they were discussing this and again saying, well, this is the end of impeachment, a turning point in this effort to get Mr. Trump. We can play that clip now.
That question, was the ball advanced?
No. Impeachment's over. I don't think Nancy Pelosi is going to stand for her members, bring forth something that is going to obviously lose in the Senate, lose with the American public. And the problem with Mueller's testimony on this issue is that he had to carry the ball for them some way, whether he wanted to or not, at least by being a vigorous, strong, rock solid prosecutor. And he looked like somebody who'd slowed a step or two, and perhaps as the Republicans are starting to put out there, maybe he wasn't even in control of all those angry Democrats. Maybe he's a figurehead, somebody from the past that they put there so they could do their dirty work. That's the theory they're coming out with. It's not going to be bought by Democrats, but they needed more fuel for any kind of impeachment effort.
So that was ABC. Now, there are other clips noting this weakness. I think it was I forgot to note down who it was on Twitter. I think it was the GOP chairwoman who put together just a brief montage of some of the left-wing media talking about the Mueller hearing. We can hear that quickly now.
There were also times when it seemed like he was unfamiliar with parts of the investigation.
On optics, this was a disaster.
This has been a disaster for the Democrats.
It was halting and slow and painful.
It certainly seems like Donald Trump is winning.
That was from the left. Mr. Trump, he gave a speech about this. He came out and talked to some journalists about the testimony. And you know, he noted the turning point that this was in terms of all of the accusations against him as well. We can play a clip from that speech for you quickly now.
So we had a very good day today. The Republican Party, our country, there was no defense of what Robert Mueller was trying to defend, in all fairness to Robert Mueller. Whether his performance was a bad one or a good one, I think everybody understands that. I think everybody understands what's going on. There was no defense to this ridiculous hoax, this witch hunt that's been going on for a long time, pretty much from the time I came down on the escalator with our First Lady. And it's a disgrace what happened, but I think today proved a lot to everybody. In fact, some of my biggest opponents wrote things today that I wouldn't have believed they would have written, and I appreciate that they did that. This has been a very bad thing for our country. And despite everything we've been through, it's been an incredible 2.5 years for our country.
So a big turning point, even as he said, some of his critics now defending him, or at least saying, well, that report didn't go very well. And I said, there was 5.5, I think, hours of testimony, certainly a lot of testimony. So there'll be a lot to get through. I think there's a lot of specifics that can be made from that, a lot of different points, a lot of different ways that Mueller kind of contradicted himself. Anyway, there's a lot to dig into, and I imagine that we'll probably hear more from that on a later Trumpet show. But one of the things that really stood out to me after watching some of those clips, reading some of the reports about that, was the front cover of our August Trumpet print edition. It's not August, but this article has been out for a few weeks. And Mr. Flurry has the cover article on there. Can President Trump get control of his divided government? And in that he writes, biblical prophecy indicates there will be something of a turnaround, though, and that President Trump will actually gain more control of these government agencies that have been working to unseat him. There's something of a turnaround. That's what's on the cards. That's what Bible prophecy implies. And that's exactly what we saw yesterday. At least just a part of that. Something of a turnaround. Or even like we've heard some of those clips, there were Democrats saying now, well, yeah, impeachment is dead. You know, now the focus will shift to the investigation into the FBI. Some people have talked along those lines. Now, the key to all of this, the key to understanding why Mr. Flurry made that prediction and a forecast that I think we're just watching unfold right before our eyes right now, with that hearing, with the fallout from the hearing, with everything that's happening with William Barr having people now investigate the investigators. The key to all of that is understanding a prophecy in the Bible. And it's a prophecy about, or a description in the Bible about a king of Israel, King Jeroboam II. Now, you can look at books in the Bible like the book of Amos, and in that book, it's clear there are prophecies in that book for the future, things that did not happen in Amos's time or even shortly after. Amos's time. You know, he describes the wonderful world after the Messiah returns to earth, for example, in that book. He talks about a time where there's so much abundance that the plowman overtakes the reaper, that there's no shortages of food, and describing a time that we just haven't seen yet, a time that hasn't happened yet, time, the prophecy that's obviously for the future. That makes that book prophetic. And that book talks about Jeroboam, a historic figure, Jeroboam II. And that makes Jeroboam prophetic. And that makes the historical example of that king prophetic, that we can turn back and look at his reign in ancient Israel, and we can learn about the future from that. And there's just some really interesting points there that Mr. Flurry draws out in this article and in other ones about his reign. 2 Kings chapter 14 is where it discusses Jeroboam II, for example. And, well, it starts talking about him, in verse 23, but in verse 26, it says that with the time of Jeroboam, it says that, "For the Eternal saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper found in Israel." So things were bad. Israel was in big trouble. And Mr. Flurry looked at that prophecy, and he put it together with some other prophecies and some of the articles that he's written. You can read Great Again, for example, as a great overview of everything that's going on here. And he said, well, you can see the same thing looking at the United States today. The United States was in the run-up to President Trump, was in big trouble. The freedom was about to be eclipsed. Freedom was in trouble. The ability for people to choose their leaders, to just have freedom in their own lives. You know, he was looking at that and saying that, but he's not the only one that's made that analysis. I don't think I saw as many at the time, but here's just a quick clip from Sean Hannity yesterday, again, talking about the danger that America was in that we're now seeing exposed.
This country came painfully close. This great democratic republic, the greatest country God gave man, we came dangerously close to allowing a few people, reckless, lawless people, to spread lies, conspiracies, and a hoax, and successfully trying to undo the will of the American people. First trying to prevent their favorite candidate from being indicted. They were successful. They tried to prevent Donald Trump from ever winning. And then after he won, they had their insurance policy. And tonight, that insurance policy has been played out before the world to see, and it is now officially over.
So dangerously close. Just like the Bible talks about, you know, freedom was about to be wiped out. Israel was about to be in captivity then. The affliction was very bitter. And that's exactly what we heard being talked about just on that clip there. And then verse 27, though, talks about where Jeroboam II comes in. And the Eternal said, not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. So God said he was going to save Israel, and it wasn't because of anything Israel deserved or because of anything to do with any particular leader, but because of his plan for the nation. And in that article, that cover article from the August print edition, "Can President Trump Get Control of His Own Divided Government?" Mr. Flurry wrote, "For America to be saved, those agencies need to be cleaned up." Talking about the FBI and the CIA and these same kind of agencies involved with the Mueller report. They need to be cleaned up and made to abide by the rules. If they are driven by ideology rather than the Constitution and the law, then they will quickly turn America into a tyrannical state. That is what happens without government to implement the law. And that is what America was close to experiencing. But something happened to stop that, at least temporarily. And as he said there, well, okay, for America to be saved, it means that these agencies need to be cleaned up. And I think yesterday went some ways towards that happening, to exposing some of what's been going on in those agencies. In that article, who will win is on the cover, but President Trump gets control. Well, can President Trump get control of his own divided government? Mr. Flurry draws attention to another key prophetic scripture, And that is in Amos that I mentioned before that talks about Jeroboam II. And that is in Amos chapter 7. Amos chapter 7 and verse 12. Here it says, well, also Amaziah said unto Amos, O you seer, go flee away into the land of Israel and eat bread and prophesy there, but prophesy not any more against Bethel. It is the king's chapel and the king's court. And so this is a man, you can see earlier, Amaziah, he was involved with Jeroboam II. And Mr. Flurry, in that article, he wrote, when Amaziah talks about the king's chapel, this implies that Jeroboam has the backing of the nation's religious people. And we've seen that, and Mr. Flurry's talked about that on this show before. And then going a bit further down, he says, then Amaziah says the king's court. Here the word for kings is actually the Hebrew word meaning kingdom. It's a different word than used when it says king's chapel. It should read, it is the kingdom's court. And the word court can refer to an assembly of buildings or an area where the law is taught and practiced and used. Webster defines court as a place where justice is dealt. The Hebrew word could also mean household. One definition is a movable house, a tent with a covenant in it. Another source says place of any kind. So this is very broad, and it's discussing the national power as governed by the president. In Washington, D.C., is the Supreme Court building where judges are to interpret the law. In the same area are the buildings of the CIA, the FBI, the Justice Department, the State Department, the Pentagon, and others. Most of them were built during or after the Great Depression when they had a lot of manpower to use, so they built some truly impressive structures for the government. It is logical this prophecy is talking about these government structures or agencies. After all, if Jeroboam is going to be used to save Israel, he would need the law on his side. He wouldn't be able to use the government like he needed to without the legal structure behind him. He needs that power. The leader of End Time Israel in Amos 7 had a lot of power, but he has had to fight to get that power and hold it. So it's saying, well, this prophecy, it's logical that it's talking about President Trump getting control of these agencies, that he would be in control of the kingdom's court, that he would be in control of the CIA, the FBI, the Justice Department, the places that are launching all of these investigations. And commentators are basically talking about exactly that based on yesterday's testimony, that this is a momentous step towards him getting control of these courts, of what's been going on there being exposed. And what we saw on display yesterday was fulfilled prophecy. That's a reason to be excited. That's a reason for hope and optimism. Now, it's important to note that this is only temporary, this resurgence that's happening under President Trump. We'll talk about this a bit more later. I wanted to get into this a bit first because understanding this prophecy and this prophetic background is important to understanding what I want to talk about with Brexit and with the new Prime Minister in the next segment. But in that Trumpet print article, Mr. Flurry writes, how wonderful that God reveals that spectacular future in advance to give us all hope as we face such horrifying times. How marvelous that he explains the event that leads to the future, including what it means when a Jeroboam-type leader comes along and shocks everyone, especially the opposition, by turning things around in America. How magnificent to understand these events in the context of the larger prophetic panorama. So it was, I think yesterday was a step towards him getting control, just like Mr. Flurry forecast in that article over the kingdom's court. But at the same time, we need to put this in context of its prophetic panorama. And that's what I want to do today. And I said I want to bring Britain in too. So we'll take a quick break and then we'll talk about some of the great news that's been coming out of Britain, the sunny optimism here. And we'll put that in that critical context that Mr. Flurry talked about. It's larger context in the prophetic panorama.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
And after 3 years of unfounded self-doubt, it is time to change the record, to recover our natural and historic role as an enterprising, outward-looking, and truly global Britain, generous in temper and engaged with the world. No one in the last few centuries has succeeded in betting against the pluck and nerve and ambition of this country. They will not succeed today. We in this government will work flat out to give this country the leadership it deserves. And that work begins now.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, and that was Boris Johnson. Mr. Johnson, the new Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, giving his first speech there outside of Number 10 Downing Street as Prime Minister. And as we drew attention to yesterday, you know, full of optimism, full of a can-do spirit. And really, that's the spirit of the whole UK right now. I've got the Daily Mail from yesterday in front of me. And, well, they have a PM Boris special edition. And you know, the Daily Mail, they're not a pro-Brexit paper anymore. They're under new management. They're a pro-Remain paper. But even so, hope, optimism, it jumps off this whole paper. You know, right on the front page, they've got this big picture of Boris Johnson. I guess he looks like he's high-fiving somebody. But it says on the cover there, EU talks looming, rebel MPs plotting. But after Boris wins landslide vote with a burst of optimism on the day Britain baked, a Brexit-weary nation's cry is, now bring us sunshine. They talked about how he's giving us an upbeat vision of a re-energized nation. They wrote the Conservative leader pledged to end the British paralysis and banish negativity. And like I said, that kind of spirit just leaps off the headlines of the different pages in its paper. They have some quotes from that speech that Mr. Flurry played yesterday. Their article on that is called "Hey Dude, Speech Filled with Feel Good Factor," and just. And then they have another page. He's gonna be Britain's Trump. Who says so? The president, as he hails Boris and says he'll do tremendous things with Farage. And Mr. Flurry talked about those links to President Trump yesterday. So lots of optimism. And then you know, you see that all through the papers again today. The Daily Mail or the Daily Telegraph. I guess they are a pro-Brexit paper, but again, they had you know, lots of upbeat headlines. Urgent, pulsing and plucky. The Boris Factor is here to remind us what true leadership looks like. Why Boris Johnson's spirit of optimism will make all the difference. Boris Johnson's brilliant Brexit dream team proves that he is deadly serious. And that's, I think, one of the big reasons for optimism this morning and hope and, well, short-term hope, I should say, but certainly optimism is Boris Johnson, yesterday he unveiled his new cabinet, the people that he's going to be keeping around him. And he got rid of almost a record number, at least in modern times, of the old cabinet of Miss May's supporters. People in the press have started to be calling it the Night of the Long Knives because he fired so many people. And, you know, if you're not from the UK, probably the names of the people that he appointed aren't familiar to you. They probably don't mean much to you. But really, you know, they're great picks. There's some really good people he brought into his cabinet. He got rid of the wet, say, as Margaret Thatcher would have called them, or I guess in the US you might label them the rhinos, the Republicans in name only, those people who are, you know, they're in the right-wing party, but they're not really that right-wing. They don't really seem to believe in it. They don't believe in Brexit. They don't believe in Britain. He got rid of them, and then he brought in kind of the proper conservatives. People who have been writing newspaper columns that have been exactly right for years. And he's brought a whole lot of them into the government. That article, Urgent, Pulsing, and Plucky, began this. I'll just read a couple of quotes from that. It begins, "Action this day." That was the order on the red stickers his hero, Winston Churchill, would put on the memoranda he sent to his commanders in the field, urging a speedy resolution. You could practically feel ATD, action this day, stamped on every line of the urgent, pulsing, inspirational speech Boris Johnson gave on the steps of 10 Downing Street on Wednesday afternoon. Our new Prime Minister isn't hanging about, you know. There's a Brexit battle to be won. Sorry, this article, it goes on. Sorry, let's just stop for a second and savor that thought, shall we? Boris PM, yay! Our very own columnist, who has entertained, galvanized, and crikeyed within these pages for so long, finally has the chance to put into practice what he has preached. Now, it would be a bit like with some of those appointments yesterday in the US, if the Tea Party or something similar were all brought into positions of power all at once. Now, Alistair Heath, he was the one that wrote that article, the title I read out a little bit ago, about Boris Johnson's brilliant Brexit dream team. He writes, "Could this finally be the one? The government all true conservatives, all true Eurosceptics, and all true free marketeers have spent years pining for. The first genuinely centre-right government since Margaret Thatcher, committed to changing Britain in deep and radical ways." You know, he talked about some of the dangers and the optimism that we could be disappointed. But he wrote, "Despite all these obvious, almost overwhelming dangers, the early signs are that there is at least a chance that something extraordinary might happen. For the first time since the early 1980s, contrary to what the naysayers had claimed, there is a plan, there is a method, and there are the people to deliver it." So the great make-or-break question for Johnson this time around were whether he would appoint a proper team immediately and what its intellectual and ideological composition would be. He didn't disappoint. Johnson's decision to purge the cabinet of anyone who couldn't or wouldn't deliver was spot on. Many of his critics feared that he would be too weak to wield the axe. Instead, he proved ruthless and decisive, launching the most radical reshaping of a cabinet outside of a change of party in living memory. It's do or die, and he meant it. This article goes on to say, "His appointments so far have been exceptional, as good as there could be from a free market and Eurosceptic perspective. Take the top three cabinet jobs. Syed Javid, a free marketeer with a superb grip of economics and finance, now has it in his gift to become one of Britain's great chancellors. Priti Patel, a principled Thatcherite who will be a radical anti-crime Home Secretary, and Dominic Raab, will project a pro-Brexit vision of global Britain as a foreign secretary. All three are children of immigrants. All three embody the great pro-capitalist Tory meritocratic ethic of the 1980s. And, yeah, like I said, well, if you're not from the UK, those names probably don't mean much to you. But these are people who have been pro-Brexit all along, who have really and worked hard for years, even years before the referendum, worked hard to bring this about. You know, Priti Patel, for example, she was basically fired from Theresa May's cabinet for being too pro-Israel. But she's brought into one of the top positions in Boris Johnson's cabinet. I mean, a pro-Israel politician in Britain's government, that's fantastic. I mean, we so rarely seem to have that. One of his first biggest appointments was to appoint Dominic Cummings as a senior advisor, which, again, a name that's probably not familiar if you're not from the UK, but I was really cheered to see that. He's in case you have seen that the Uncivil War movie that they put together about the Brexit campaign, he was the one that was played by Benedict Cumberbatch. He is right at the heart of the Brexit movement. He was the leader of the vote, or the director of the Vote Leave campaign. He played a huge role in getting Britain out. And he's one of those people that, to the people that don't like him, they believe he is genuinely insane. To the people that do, he is a genius, but still a bit mad. Anyway, a great force of personality. He is going to drive the deep state or the civil service or whatever what you want to call it in Britain. He is going to drive them mad. I would love to it would be very entertaining to watch him come into there as a senior advisor with a lot of authority, taking charge of that apparatus. And it wouldn't surprise me if we see a whole lot of them quit, faced with his drive, his energy, his commitment to just trying to do the right thing rather than the way it is always done, to a radical change. I hear a lot about kind of updating democracy into the modern, the internet age. And people were talking about his appointment as being one of the most significant ones in terms of telegraphing what this next government under Boris Johnson is going to be like. It's going to be radical. It's going to be different. It's going to be committed to making big changes. That's the message that the appointment of men like Dominic Cummings sends to the nation. And Robert Peston, he wrote, that's the ITV's political advisor, that Cummings is never a passive advisor. Cummings has an extraordinary sense of purpose and objectives, and pity those who get in his path. And all the right commentators are happy to see what's happening here. And things are looking down. Things are looking bad for the anti-Brexit deep state or the Remain establishment in the UK in a whole load of other ways. I mean, we've mentioned before, we've talked about before the way Britain's deep state, say, or the media, the press, top politicians, they've all opposed Brexit. They've all attacked pro-Brexit supporters. And anti-Brexit critics, they've tried to create this whole narrative that said, well, Brexit only won the referendum because they cheated. There's even some of the more unhinged members of that are saying, well, it's the Russians, just like in the US. It's Russian collusion. That's where Brexit came from. That's why Brexit won the election. You know, they've said, well, these campaign groups, they broke spending limits. And Britain's Electoral Commission, they've tried to help this narrative along by selectively prosecuting pro-Brexit groups while turning a blind eye to spending irregularities and law-breaking, basically, from the anti-Brexit groups. Those that oppose Brexit, when they were forced to confront their law-breaking, they're let off with small fines. But they really go after the pro-Brexit people. So the anti-Brexit people, they're let off with small fines. But the Electoral Commission, they've really gone after anybody who's pro-Brexit. And one of their biggest victims was a young guy. I think he was, at the time, maybe 22. I think he's a bit older now. Pro-Brexit campaigner Darren Grimes. And he helped organize a pro-Brexit youth group in the run-up to this election. And the Electoral Commission really went to town on him. I think he was just a pawn in terms of their aim to, or the anti-Brexit people's aim to paint this all as some kind of illegal underhand thing. So they conducted an investigation into Darren Grimes, and they found that he did nothing wrong. And so they conducted another investigation into Darren Grimes, and they found he did nothing wrong. And so they conducted a third investigation into Darren Grimes, and they found, finally, one box that he had ticked incorrectly on one form. They also said in this third investigation, they found that he had overcompleted a form about his spending. Now, he gave them too much information. And apparently that is a terrible crime. And so they decided to fine him for law breaking. They wanted to give him a £20,000 fine. But a lot of the pro-Brexit people, they rallied around him. The Guido Fawkes blog, run by Paul Staines, for example, they helped him organize a crowdfunding campaign to appeal against this persecution. And the Electoral Commission, they spent £500,000 pursuing this 22-year-old who ticked one box wrong through the courts. £500,000. And last Friday, a judge ruled not only in Grimes' favor, but he gave the Electoral Commission a pretty big telling off. You know, he said that the form that they'd accused Grimes of making a mistake on, the judge said it was very complicated, really hard to fill in correctly. But more importantly, he said that the way the Electoral Commission had gone around this was fundamentally wrong. that they had assumed that he was guilty and then challenged him to prove that he was innocent. That the whole way they had prosecuted this was unjust. And that because of this, the Electoral Commission had ignored a whole lot of evidence that would clear him. And this is just the latest. The Electoral Commission, they also tried to get the Metropolitan Police to go after Darren Grimes. And again, the Metropolitan Police had to come back to them and say, well, no, we can't. Well, they said, again, they gave them a telling off, saying the way you're doing this is just unjust. You're not giving us the information that we need to go out after him. You're hiding information that could clear him. So I think just like in the US, you're seeing the deep state be defeated. And there have been other victories just in the last week or so, too. You may remember, if you are a very devoted listener to this show, we've talked a little bit about Sir Roger Scruton. He was sacked from the government or from having a government job a few months ago after a journalist lied about what Sir Roger had said in an interview. He twisted his words, made it sound like he was saying something he didn't. Well, he was invited back into the government just a few days ago. So you know, that injustice has been reversed and corrected. The Guardian, they've written some vile things about a female pro-Brexit reporter. They've been forced, last Friday, they were forced to apologize. You know, those are some small victories, but everywhere you look in the UK, just like in the US, you see the deep state in retreat. You see you see sound-minded individuals ascendant. You see things looking up. You know, that's why it's easy to be optimistic. But there's something critical we have to remember about this. Now, Mr. Flurry, he mentioned Britain having a resurgence briefly in that same article that I've been quoting from. Can President Trump get control of his own divided government? He wrote about things looking like the end of the U.S. Republic. You know, we played a bit about that in the first half. But he notes there, but God was not ready for that. He was going to save America along with Britain and the Jewish nation. However, this was going to be temporary unless they deeply repent. So Mr. Flurry talks about there, well, Britain being included in that. That God is saving both Britain and America. And you know, we see that reflected in the events in both these countries. But it's important to remember that it is temporary. Now, I think optimism, hope is natural. And as we'll talk about at the end of the show, there is a whole lot of reasons to be optimistic, to be hopeful for our nations, even way beyond just some of these temporary news events. But the big danger is here that we can kind of see things getting better and relax. You know, that's exactly what happened in ancient Israel. Mr. McDonald, he has an article that's coming up in the September Trumpet print edition. I believe that goes to print today, so you should soon be able to get that. He wrote, it's based on a Trumpet brief that he had that you can get on our website, thetrumpet.com, talking about the ancient Jeroboam II. You can go, you could look at his blogs and see that on the website. But back then, you know, in ancient Israel under Jeroboam II, God's prophets were warning Israel of what was happening. But people just ignored it. They looked around and they said, well, no, you know what? Things are good. They're great. We're at the peak of our power. We don't need to worry about anything. We don't need to worry about these warnings. And there's the same danger with Britain and America today. You know, we have, say, this dream team that's now in charge in the UK. And I think they may do a good job of taking care of some of these problems. I mean, they've been in power one day, so we still need to see. But yeah, sure, they may do a good job of taking care of some of Britain's problems. At the same time, though, we can't forget some of the serious problems facing both Britain and America. You know, family breakdown, for example. Mr. Armstrong talked about the family breakdown being more destructive than a hydrogen bomb. Boris Johnson's not going to fix that. President Trump, he may well put in some policies, say, that will slow. Both of these individuals may well put in place some of these policies that will slow some of what the radicals left's doing, potentially. But they're not going to fundamentally fix our nation's family breakdown. Now, in his speech outside No. 10 Downing Street yesterday, the one I played the clip from, well, he also talked about how Britain needs to lead the world in terms of LGBT rights. He's not going to address that problem. You've also got the situation where he's not married to his live-in girlfriend. And, well, I don't recall that ever happening before for a prime minister where they're not married to their partner. And nobody bats an eye. I haven't seen a single news article that has drawn, I mean, everyone knows it. It's not like it's a secret or anything, but nobody's drawn attention to it. Nobody said, well, isn't it remarkable that we have a prime minister now that isn't married to his girlfriend that he's living with? And that's because that is completely normal for Britain today. That's something that for a whole lot of the country, they're not even going to bat an eyelid about. Probably for the vast majority. That's just the way people live now. He's not going to change that. And there's a whole host of problems that come from family breakdown, a rising crime, drug problems, hopelessness problems. You've got the opioid epidemic in the United States. You've got drug epidemics in the UK. All of these problems that trace their cause back to family breakdown. I mean, even the debt problems that we have in our nation. You have this situation where families break down, families no longer look after each other. Parents, because of divorce, they now need help from the government to pay and to look after their children because you've got all of these single parents. You've got families no longer looking after, the grandparents. They're no longer being looked after by their family, so the state has to step in and do it. But the government just fundamentally can't afford it. Now, that's probably one of the more minor outcomes of family breakdown. But you see this looming debt crisis, big in both the UK and the US. And that's not something that either of these leaders are even interested in fixing. You had that budget in the US that Mr. Flurry talked about yesterday. I've seen more and more articles just talking about how dire, how shameful even, that budget that was passed in the United States is. The American Spectator, they had a piece either this morning or yesterday. The spending is getting embarrassing. And they made a great point in there where they talked about, well, that the economy is doing great in a whole lot of ways in the United States. But they point out that in previous years, even the most left-wing kind of pro-debt economists would tell you, save some money when times are good so that you can borrow when times are bad, or that you have money to spend when times are bad. Or they'd say things like, well, yeah, borrow when times are bad and then pay that debt back when times are good. That would have been, say, the far left message coming from previous generations economists. Borrow in bad times, pay it back in good. Now, you've got a Republican, a right-wing administration in the United States with the economy doing great and no even thought of trying to pay back debt, with record levels of borrowing that just keep shooting up year after year after year. And it's the same with the UK. I mean, people were talking about how Boris Johnson, again, I think this is even in some of the right-wing press, that he needs to come in and he needs to, quote, spend, spend, spend. That's what we need to do. Spend, spend, spend. And again, in his speech yesterday, Mr. Johnson talked about all kinds of spending. You know, 20,000 new police officers, shorter wait times at hospitals, which is all funded by the government and for doctors. The government paying for in-home care for the elderly. And yeah, that all sounds great. But where's the money coming from? And we're already at record levels of debt in the UK as well. And he's not even interested in addressing that. And so this starts to get to the overall context we must see things in, the context of the larger prophetic panorama, as Mr. Flurry said. Our nations, they are still making serious mistakes. They are still sinning. They will still suffer the consequences of those mistakes. And God is sending punishment, curses, to correct us, to make us turn things around. And I'm not saying this because I just want to be a party pooper or rain on everybody's parade, including my own parade, I guess, seeing as I'm feeling still pretty happy about some of what's going on. You know, there is a right kind of patriotism, a love of country that is a good thing. And Mr. Flurry, in that article, he talked about how it's refreshing to see a lot of this happening It's refreshing for those of you in the US to see a lot of what's happening in the US. It's refreshing for me here in the UK to see a lot of this news coming out of the UK. And we mourn when our countries suffer. We don't like to see it. And so naturally, we feel good when some of that turns around, when people do start addressing at least some of the problems that are facing our nation, even if they're not going to comprehensively fix all of them. But when we see that bigger context, there's even more hope. There's more optimism. There's a more sure foundation for hope and optimism. And we can't look to Mr. Trump or Mr. Johnson to solve our nation's sin problem. We can't look to them to, if we're going to place our hopes in the resurgence that these men bring, that's only going to be temporary. And who really knows how temporary? I mean, in the UK, it could be very temporary. It feels good today, but the Bible's full of prophecies that talk about Britain is going to ultimately, it's Europe that's going to be victorious in kind of this struggle between Britain and Europe, not Britain. And so, I don't know how long we'll get a resurgence. Maybe we'll see a fantastic victory by Donald Trump on October 31st. Maybe we won't. But maybe we'll see that victory. Who knows how long that will last afterwards. But we need to see that bigger prophetic panorama to have a more solid foundation for hope and for optimism. And sure, we can learn and we can gain from that infectious kind of action this day mentality that Prime Minister Johnson has brought to the UK government. We can learn from that. We can use that. It's critical that we do use that because that gets to the heart of why there has been a resurgence. Why God is having this temporary resurgence. Mr. Flurry talked about the reason why in A Key of David in May 2018. We'll play a quick clip from that now.
Well, you have the history of Israel, and then it is prophetic when God talks about saving Israel. He saved them anciently, or temporarily, and he's going to save them in this end time, temporarily. So he can get one more message to them, one more warning. He's given numerous warnings before, but he wants to give one more to give them a chance to repent and turn to God and not be corrected as severely as they will be if they don't respond.
So why? Why is there this resurgence? Why is God saving Israel temporarily? Because there's a warning message that we have to get out. There's a work that we have to do. There's action this day that we need to be taking. And the fact that it's temporary gives us a lot of urgency to go and to do what we can. Mr. Flurry talked about that a bit later in that Key of David. I've got one more clip from that we can play now.
Have you noticed how successful Mr. Trump has been in spite of almost unbelievable opposition? Is that just him doing that? And the answer is no, it isn't. God said he would save Israel through an end time Jeroboam. He would do that temporarily. Now, why is it temporary? Well, there is a message that has to go out one more time.
There's a message that has to go out. We have a short time to get one more message out. That is why the resurgence. A good chunk of it. And all of that comes from God's love. He loves our people. He wants them to repent. And if that's not a message of optimism, I don't know what is. I mean, Safari makes the same thing in this article I've been quoting. He talks about that age of prosperity in ancient Israel. And he said it was only temporary. God used it to give one final warning. So we can, like I said, inject that positivity, that action this day, that optimism into giving this warning, into doing this work. There's just a short time left. And so it's the time to get involved, to contribute, to give, to get the work done. And it's something everybody, anybody, can contribute to. Now, the Bible talks about, I'm rapidly running time, the Bible talks about, for example, in Romans chapter 15, verse 30, about laboring together with God's apostle in prayer, striving, Paul says, strive with me. You know, really work hard with me in prayer. That's something anyone can do. That's something that this work needs in this time of this temporary resurgence, so we can use this time as effectively as possible. I mean, it's interesting, and they're the prophetic nations, that God draws attention to this resurgence in Britain, America, and Israel, and God has a work in Britain, America, and Israel. That's not coincidence, and we just have a short time to get that work done. When you see that picture, when you see what God's doing, that's the sure foundation for hope and optimism. As we kind of come towards the end, I'll just read the conclusion from Mr. Flurry's article here, because it is such a positive conclusion on this article that, I'll read you that quote one more time. Can President Trump get control of his own divided government? And I'd really urge you, if you haven't read that article, to go on our Trumpet website, thetrumpet.com. If you scroll down a bit, you'll see the front cover of our latest magazine. You know, really read that. That gives you the background to understand what is happening here. But God talks about, Mr. Flurry talks about in there, how wonderful that God reveals the specific future in advance to give us hope to face such terrifying times. How marvelous that he explains the events that lead to the future, including what it means when a Jeroboam-type leader comes along and shocks everyone by turning things around in America. He says, even the nightmares of the Great Tribulation make sense when you apprehend the increasing big picture. Receiving this kind of understanding is priceless. In fact, God says that those to whom he reveals this truth and who help him proclaim it, those who wholeheartedly turn to him and conquer the devil, will share his throne and help him rule. It may involve confrontation in the short time as it did for Amos, but it comes with the magnificent honor of sitting on the throne of David with Jesus and Christ forever. That should make a throne of David with Jesus Christ forever. That should make your imagination soar. See that vision, be moved and stirred by it, and turn your whole heart to God. He will transform that vision into reality. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Please tune in tomorrow here at KPCG at TD at kpcg.fm.